Hello and welcome to the Beach House 34 podcast. I'm your host, Christine Worth. First of all, a warm welcome to all the new subscribers and a huge thank you to all of the loyal listeners. I am so, so humbled and appreciative of you. Before we get started, this episode is a continuing series on the trial readings for the Darlie Routier case. Now, Darlie Routier, she was a mother who in 1996 was accused and convicted of murdering two of her children in Rowlett, Texas, and she currently sits on death row. The case, however, is not as cut and dried as it may seem. If you're interested in hearing the true crime episode about her case, you can find that in episode number 33, and I will have the link for you below in the show notes. Now, this episode will definitely leave you kind of scratching your head, and you might think, well, oh, hey, this is why she decided to do the trial readings for this. Now, as soon as these trial readings are done, I'll be back to a weekly true crime and paranormal episode series. So with all that said, thank you all. Now, let's get on with the next trial reading, which is now we are on Charles Lynch, number 4. And at the end of Charles Lynch number 3, the defense had begun to start to question Charles Lynch, and they had gone through a lot of different things, but then had started into the questioning about the screen, and that's where we kind of left off. So that's where we're going to take over at this time. And again, it is Mr. Mosty of Darlie's defense team who is asking the questions, and he begins. Okay, all right, let's turn to the screen. And I want to cover that in some detail. And I'm going to talk about the knife and the screen and such as that. If I understand it, the first thing that you did was inspected a knife. Well, 68H. That was the first thing you did? No. What was the first thing that you did? The first thing I did was start with what I call knife number 1, collecting debris from it, okay? And then to knife number 3, then to knife number 4, okay? Number 5, 6, 7, 8, okay? Now, let me just ask you a question. Of the knives you tested, and let me see, don't I have them all here in my hand? And the last one is 67, I believe. You ultimately tested it, but in the first round, just these? Right. Well, of these, are you talking about the bloody knife? The bloody knife was examined also in the same manner. Of these 3, 6, 8 knives, how many of them have sharp points? All of them except one. Okay. And that is 67C? Right. And 67H has a different point than the other ones, doesn't it? That's right. Doesn't it seem logical to you that if you were going to go cut a screen, that you would have chosen one of those sharp-pointed ones? I wouldn't cut the screen. I would just pull it off the window. That wasn't my question. Of course, what you are trying to do is be quiet, isn't it, sir? You are trying to be quiet, aren't you? Trying to be quiet? Quiet, if you were a burglar. Pardon me? If you were a burglar, murderer, an unwanted intruder, you just want to be quiet. Isn't that right? I guess. And all of these other are sharp-pointed, more sharp-pointed than 67H, aren't they? Yes, they are. Now, I don't know how to get these back in the right spot, so I'm not going to try. Let's talk about 67H. That's the one you were talking about finding fibers on. Yes, sir. Various things? Yes, sir. Now, when you testified about that, you cannot tell the jury anything about where this fiberglass rod was. You did find a white tail hair on this one, didn't you? Or deer hair on this one? No. Okay. Which one did you find the deer hair on? The deer hair was on the sock. Okay. Did you find cat hairs on this one? No. Okay. In any evident, you didn't note where any of this debris was in relationship to the other debris. I can give you a range on the blade. But you didn't, for instance, get on, I didn't stop and say group one or group two or a mark. No, sir. Are these your initials on the back of that or engraved in there, I think, on the blade? On the blade? No, they aren't. Did you put any markings on that? I don't believe I did. In any event, you didn't place any marking to identify any of these areas of debris? No, sir. And what you told us was that you found a part of a fiberglass rod? That's right. Tell me how long it was. It was about 40 microns long, which translates to, can I see that? Not without a microscope. No, sir. Okay. Not visible to the naked eye? Not individually. A bunch of them together, you may see something, but not individually. Those things are bundled, rolled in a string in that type of screen, aren't they? That's right. How many of them in that bundle? It could be 100. Some of them have different sizes or diameters. Within the group of screen fiberglass fibers, they were within a close range diameter. There was pretty good quality control in that. There was some variation. There was some variation, yes, sir, in those actual fibers. And you found one of those, which was, you say, 40 microns? Long. Long. Translate that to inches for me. Well, I can't do it right offhand, but I can give you a comparison. In length? Well, in diameter, the diameter of it is about 10 microns. So 10 by 40 microns. Yes, sir. Okay. Compared to a head hair, a lot smaller than an individual head hair? Yes, sir. And we can use my old drawing. I forget what defendant's exhibit number is on it, but if indeed that hair is one of my head hairs, the fiberglass fiber would be like the little hair that I have drawn above it with the indication to root end. That would be a pretty good comparison of how small it is. Okay. There is no way you can definitively connect that fiberglass rod to any kind of dust, is there? The rod, as it occurs on the microscope slide, is separate from the dust residue. Okay. And you can't tell that those two have ever been married together or bonded together? I don't know that they started out together, no. And there is no way to know that, is there? Not as they occur, no. And fiberglass, those fiberglass rods, are found in a multitude of items in and around houses, aren't they? Yes, sir, they are. Insulation, draperies, clothing, all sorts of stuff, aren't they? Well, not so much clothing. But the other items, yes, sir. Draperies, certainly, yes, sir. And insulations, sure. Found on boats, yes, sir. And then you said you found some residue that you called, did you call that rubbery residue? I call it rubber dust particles. Rubber dust particles, okay. And there was not enough of that. You couldn't run a test like the DNA test you ran on the hair. You couldn't run... There isn't a test to run on that dust. There is a test that can be done. I was not able to get these things removed and to the proper surface in order to do the test. I attempted, but I couldn't do it. So there wasn't even enough to run a scientific test to back up and to determine whether or not you could draw a conclusion that that was a particular type of rubbery material. That's correct. The absolute chemical identification of that rubber dust was not accomplished. Now, you could identify by rubber dust, is that a polymer? Yes, sir. I've got some notes here that I need to look at that are escaping me. And Mr. Mosty then says, Your Honor, it looks to me like I may have left some of my notes back at the office. I could go on with another area, or whenever we're going to recess, we could have them back without any delay in the recess. The court says, well, Mr. Mosty then says, do you want me to go on for a while? the court says, we will take a 10-minute recess for organizational purposes. So at this point, a 10-minute recess is taken and everybody goes out and then everybody comes back. And the court says, all right, everybody have a seat and let's bring the jury back in, please. Are both sides ready to bring the jury back in and resume? Mr. Davis says, yes, sir, we are ready. Mr. Mosty says, yes, Your Honor, we are ready now. The court then says, all right, bring the jury in, please, Miss Biggerstaff. So the jury is then brought back into the courtroom, and the court then says, all right, let the record reflect that all parties in the trial are present and the jury is seated. All right, Mr. Mosty. And then the cross-examination is resumed. Mr. Mosty says, let me cover something else with you briefly. You have testified that about these vacuum cleaner wheels? Yes, sir. You only testified about the back wheels. Am I right? That's right. And did you say there was swabbing done on those back wheels? When you do the presumptive blood test, it is with a swab. Yes, sir. Okay. But you could not see any blood on the wheels? I didn't see any visible. No. Okay. Who was doing that? You and Catherine Long or just you? And Catherine Long primarily did it. The swabbing? Right. But you were both looking at it? Right. Did you look for blood? You had on gloves, didn't you? Yes, sir. Did you move that wheel around to visually inspect it? Yes, sir, I did. And that would be on both sides? That's right. Did you make a full rotation at that time? Yeah. Yes, sir. Visually? Yes, sir. And neither you nor Catherine Long saw any blood on that wheel? I didn't see any visible. No. None visible? No. Nor did she? I don't know what she recorded. She didn't say to you, look there, Mr. Lynch? No. Or look there, Charlie, there it is? No. Okay. And then how many swabbing locations did she do? Well, again, when you do a swabbing for presumptive blood, you swab and you rotate and then you do a testing. Then you swab some more and rotate, test. So you wouldn't take one swab and do one spot and spin the whole wheel around? No. Do you do one location per swab? No. You do here and there and no. It's more like I described. You would be wiping, moving a little bit, wipe, doing a continuous circle. Then once your swab had played out, then you would test it with the blood reagent. By your swab played out, what do you mean? You used up all of the surface of the cotton on the applicators. Okay. So, and then you go to another swab. That's right. Do you know how many swabs she did? No, I don't. You have seen the photographs out there, haven't you? Yes, sir. I mean, well, you were there, of course, on the 6th. Am I right? Yes, sir. Let me show you State's Exhibit 43A. And the court then says, can all members of the jury view that? Mr. Mosty says, can you see it? The court says, Mr. Mosty, you may want to back away some. Mr. Mosty says, I will get it as soon as I get him to identify it. And the court says, oh, okay. Mr. Mosty then begins to question Mr. Lynch again. Have you seen 43A before? I don't believe so. No, sir. Okay. Well, look at 43B. Have you seen that before? I have seen a smaller print version. I haven't seen that. All right. Now, in 43B? Yes, hold it right there. Well, I can do it right here. Let me do it here. Okay. In 43B, Mr. Lynch, the court then says, can the end juror see that? Okay. Okay. Yes. Mr. Mosty continues. In 43B, Mr. Lynch, directing your attention to this area over here, this blood mark? Yes, sir. Do you recall seeing that at the time of my visit? Yes. I don't recall it specifically. Okay. Well, that is an area of blood, isn't it? Yes, sir, it is. And it's an area of some blood that had some depth to it. Right. And it appears that somehow or another, the two edges of that blood have been furrowed out. Furrowed out. Okay. Yes, sir. Okay. And so there is enough blood there to where whatever went through there pushed it aside and got blood on it? Yes, sir. And wouldn't you expect that had this vacuum cleaner run a wheel through that furrow, that you would have been able to see blood on here? Not in the way we received it. You mean, when did you receive it? Well, in the way that we received it. What is the way that you received it? It was received with a paper sack on the handle and no covering on the bottom of it. So I don't know. Again, I don't know the history of those wheels from possibly making that impression to the laboratory. When did you see it? When did you see this vacuum cleaner? First time? Yes. I can't find that note right now, but if you want to ask me another question, I'll keep looking. Well, I don't want you to be thinking about something else while you're answering. You don't remember whether or not you looked at it on the 6th? Is that fair to say? I didn't examine it closely on the 6th. You did not look for blood on the 6th? Right. But it's certainly possible that wheel gone through and created that, what you have described as a furrow, that there would still be visible blood on the wheel on the 6th? Well, afterwards, you know, a week later when you saw it, it's certainly possible that there would be blood still there. Well, it depends on how much it's been rolled around. Pardon? It depends on how much it's been rolled around after it was collected at the crime scene. Well, of course, now it's been testified that it was very carefully picked up and not rolled at all. I'm talking about after it's removed from the house. Well, would you expect that somebody would, after it's been removed from the house, pick it up and roll it out to their car? I can't testify what somebody else might do. Okay. You would hope that they would be careful with it, wouldn't you? Yes, sir, I would. All right. Let's talk about fiberglass and rubber for a while. Fiberglass, there are only, what, 4 or 5 manufacturers of fiberglass in the United States? I think there are 2 companies that actually make fiberglass. They sell to 4 other places that incorporate it into the window screen type material that is sold in bulk rolls to any numerous outlets who make the screens. Okay, but I am talking about in the broader perspective. Fiberglass, for all sorts of things that go in drapes and all that kind of stuff. There are only a few manufacturers of fiberglass in the United States, aren't there? Right. And they manufacture all sorts, from these minute things that we have seen to much larger applications. That's right. And then they send that to some distributor and they put their brand on it. They make the raw product, fiberglass, in varying diameters with varying adhesives on it. Then they sell that raw product to the people who make those boats, drapes, whatever it is. Right. Okay. And some of the things that are fiberglass, for instance, you have fiberglass cutting boards in your kitchen often, don't you? I don't know if I have seen a board made of fiberglass. Wrapping materials oftentimes have fiberglass in them. What kind of wrapping materials? All sorts. Things that you do at the post office that you know you... The tape? Tape, yes. That is what I mean by wrapping materials. Yes. Tapes, packaging tapes. Right. We have already covered drapes. We have fiberglass threads, don't we? Threads, right. For what kind of thread? Threads to sew, to tie things together with. I'm not an authority on that. I can just tell you what I have read. I don't think they would hold very good. All right. Well, it's in yarns and fabrics and insulators. Insulators? Insulators as an insulating material? Sure. And that is a common household type usage, isn't it, as some kind of insulator? You mean like the pink stuff we see in our attic? Yes. That has got a lot of fiberglass in it. It's primarily fiberglass. Okay. Computer circuit boards? Yeah. They are made out of fiberglass very commonly, aren't they? That's right. Now, let's turn to rubbers a little bit. Actually, rubber, natural rubber, is under the broad definition of a plastic, isn't it? Plastic polymers are used interchangeably. Plastic, just meaning some material that you can form into a desired shape. Right. And plastics include all sorts of things like natural rubber, or not thought of necessarily as a plastic so much, but is it a plastic type material? Natural rubber? Are you talking about something straight from the rubber tree? Natural rubber when you say that? Mm-hmm. Well, could you rephrase the question? Well, would you define plastic as organic polymeric materials? Yes, that can be formed. Yes. Okay, and they have different molecular structures, different chemical compositions. They can be the natural or synthetic. That's right. Molecular structure? That's right. A natural, an example being cellulose. I don't know if I would call that a rubber. I'm calling it an organic polymeric material. That's a very broad category it would fit into, right? Okay, that would include things like wax and natural rubber. Wax and natural rubber? Right, organic polymeric materials. Right, then synthetic ones would be things like polyethylene? Right, nylon? I would call that more of a plastic than a rubber. Would you call it a synthetic polymeric material? Sure. Okay. And you did not ever, these rubber dust particles, you never were able to observe the molecular structure of them, were you? Not on the recovered particles from the bread knife, no. So even those rubbery dust materials, could you tell me from your visual observation whether they were natural or synthetic? They were synthetic. They were synthetic. You could tell me that much? Yes, sir, I could. Okay. Now then, are you, for instance, familiar with a polymerization process? I had a year of organic chemistry. I don't know how much I retained, but somewhat. And do you understand that there are two various types of polymers through the polymerization process? It would be at least two types. Sure. Okay. Well, would you agree that the two basic processes are condensation and addition reactions? Well, are you talking about the actual chemical reaction to get these things to form long linear chains of molecules? Right. That is exactly what I am trying to do. And maybe we need to go back a little bit. When you take these synthetic materials, you are creating a chain of molecules, are you not? That's right. And this is what gives the polymers their strengths and, you know, things like plastics and polyethylenes. Those bonded molecules is what gives it its strength, right? And makes it to where you can shape it in like a boat or a pipe or whatever. And it's a good solid and strong material, right? Okay. And so to make that synthetic molecular process, there are essentially two basic processes, aren't there? Two reactions that create that? Two. Oh, at least two. And it is no telling what the technology is doing today. Would you agree with me that the two basic ones are addition and condensation reaction? I'm not sure how you are using those terms. Okay, I will tell you. Well, are you talking about addition reaction as opposed to elimination type reaction? I'm talking about the process of polymerization, where you are molding or combining these, getting the molecules to go together. Right. Well, those would be at least two, again, broad categories. All right. Would you agree with me? And you could not tell, other than this was a polymer, you could not tell the process that was used to create this polymer dust? No. And would you agree that in condensation polymers, for instance, includes things like nylon? I don't know. I'm not really familiar with that term, condensation. Okay, other than water that gets on top of my shower, okay, you are not familiar with what types of polymers are created by the condensation process? No, not offhand. Do you know whether that includes nylons, polyurethanes, and polyesters? I'm not sure. Okay, and the addition polymers, the addition reaction polymers, do you know what those are? No, I don't. You don't know whether that includes polyethylene, polypropylene, polyvinyl chloride, and polystyrene? No, I don't know. But in any event, the process, whether it be of nylons, the beginning process is a polymerization process. Right. You have melted all these materials together. And depending on how it comes down, it may be polyvinyl chloride, PVC. Sure. It could be nylon. That's right. Polypropylene. But it's not the way it cascades down a line of condensation or addition. The primary thing is, what is your starting material? That is what defines these different polymers you're talking about. And these moleculars, or the molecules, are pulled together to form whatever these different items are, right? Right, okay. And those are the molecular structures that you were not able to observe. Nobody would be able to. I don't fault you for it. Well, no. I'm just saying that beyond saying it's a polymer, that's it. That's all you can say. Synthetic polymer. Okay. And you cannot rule out nylon, polyester, polypropylene, all these other polymers, can you? Well, yeah. With polarized light microscopy, you can exclude nylons, polyesters, certainly any natural fibers. Rayons and things like that are excluded by polarized light microscopy of this material. Well, did you do that? Did I do that? Yes. Yes, sir. But you don't have enough to test and you couldn't see the molecular structure, right? With polarized light microscopy, if you can see the particle with the comparison microscope, you can see it with the polarized light microscope. And using different filters to determine what its wave orientation is, the material from the bread knife was consistent with polyvinyl chloride. But could it also have consisted of a lot of other things too, didn't it? That's right, a lot of other polymers with that same polarized light characteristic. I don't want to get into an argument with you about what was there, but the point is that that could have been any number of polymers on that knife, couldn't it? Well, not the ones I just excluded. Well, it could be a substantial number. How about that? A substantial number of polymers that have similar characteristics with the addition of the pigmentation that you see. Okay, let's talk about pigmentation. What color is that screen? From a distance with the naked eye, it appears black. And what, upon closer observation, what color is it? If you cut it on a thin section, it appears gray. The thinner the section, the lighter gray it becomes. Okay? And the most you will ever say about that screen and that knife is that it is possible that that screen could have cut that knife. Well, it's the other way around. Good. You are listening. Yes. Okay. That the knife cut the screen. How about that? Yes, sir. That knife could have cut that screen. That is a possibility? Yes, sir. All right. I just want to clarify a couple of things on some of these photographs. Of course, if that knife cut that screen, it had to somehow get back in the chopping block too, didn't it? That's right. Now, let me see if I can put these where you can see both of these exhibits. The exhibit on top is your experimental exhibit. The exhibit on top has photographs of known debris from the screen compared to debris taken from the knife, okay? And all of these that are on the left were controls, am I right? That's right. And on the right are things that you observed in your experimentation process? No, okay. On the right is material collected from that knife, okay? And exhibit 116 is, I guess, those are materials collected from that knife similar to what is on the right side of 117? That's right. All right. Let me talk about 116 for a minute. The brown in here, is that the same magnification as the gray? May I step down? Yes, sir. Mr. Mosty, after he steps down, then continues questioning. Right here. I'll tell you why I am asking, if that will help. This other exhibit, everything is in brown. That's right. And in this one, the background is in gray. And, right? And the cutouts are in brown. And it occurred to me that we have got different magnifications. Oh, it's not a difference in magnifications. It's a difference in the filtration that was used in doing the photography. Can you tell me, in 1/16, is the magnification different in the brown from the gray? Some are and some are not. Okay. Now, go ahead and have your seat back up there. And then he goes back and sits in the witness stand or at the witness stand. And Mr. Mosty then continues. When you did your experiments, you cut a screen with the knife that you had found the residue on at the end of all my testing? Yes. I did do a test with that knife. Yes. Okay. And where did you get that screen that you tested? Who supplied that? That was taken at my request from the window next to the point of entry, alleged point of entry window at the crime scene. You actually made, how did you go about that process of your saying, here is how I want to test this? And let me say first, as a scientific test, you are trying to eliminate as many variables as you can, are you not? Within limits, yeah. Well, as many as are feasibly possible, sure, all right. And so how did you go about your cut experiments? The first thing I did was to cut it with scissors, and I quickly determined that the defect was not caused by scissors. The others I would cut to see if you could tell the direction of travel of a serrated blade across it. And on those, you are just looking at it, or did you look at it under the microscope after having cut it? Both, okay. And after all of that, you concluded that could you tell the direction of travel or not? I believe I could. Yes, sir. Okay. That is what you described as the, like this? That's right. Denuding in the direction of blade travel. Now, that would seem to me that that would be somebody left-handed cutting like that. That is the direction of cut, right? Well, I mean, this is down low, so maybe the person is on their knees. It seems to me like the cut is like that, right? It's generally downward to the left, isn't it? A little bit? Are you left-handed? No. Well, the right hand, a right-hand dominant person, would cut it with their right hand and go down? Sure. It seems like it is just as easy. It would be left-handed. If they are left-handed dominant, they would cut it with their left hand down. Well, when you overextend this arm, you don't have as much control as if you were entering with this arm. But you are not worrying about entering that thing, are you? You enter by slicing it. Well, you have to do a punch. So you can't, can you conclude either way, right-handed or left-handed? No. Okay. But I can conclude that if cut from the outside, it goes right to left. If cut from the inside, it goes left to right. But do you think that is more likely a right-handed person or not? Or if you got, no, if it's from the outside, it would be more likely a right-handed person, okay? And the shirt that you talked about cutting, that was more likely a left-handed person, wasn't it? No, it could be either. Could be either. Yes. Even though Mr. Davis described it as a left-handed person doing the stabbing, it could be either hand. Okay. You got no preference on that one? No. Okay. Now, let's talk about the experiments that you did, that you then looked at the knife itself. You cut the screen? Right. And then did you make one cut or more than one cut? No, there were numerous cuts. But in between, as you cut, did you then look at it? I would make a slash and then go see what material was present on the blade. Okay. And then you would clean the blade, remove it with tweezers, and make up the microscope slide. Okay. And then before your next test, how would you clean it? Clean the tweezers? Clean the knife? With a swipe of a chem wipe. Okay. Now, you would agree with me, for instance, the cellulose that you found on, was that on this knife? That hasn't been testified to, but there was a microscopic fragment of cellulosic material on this bread knife. Okay. That could have been cutting lettuce 6 months or 9 months before, couldn't it? Or from the butcher block itself? Yeah, could have. And all of this stuff, cellulose, rubber, fiberglass, you have absolutely no way of telling anybody how long that has been on that knife, do you? No. And for instance, if it's cellulose, were there hairs on this knife, on the number four knife? I think there was a very, very thin hair. Okay. So even if it had been through the dishwasher, in all likelihood, would still have some kind of particle on it? It could, sure. Okay. Well, it could have cellulose. Okay. So how do you know that before you did your second experiment that your knife was clean? I don't know that it was absolutely clean. Okay. So as you are doing more and more experiments, you could have be having from cut number one, you could have various debris, cut number two, various debris, and some of two was actually from the number one cut? Sure. All right. Now, did you ever cut, or how many cuts did you make in your experimental process? There were numerous. I used very much of the screen. 10, 15? Yeah, at least, yes. Okay. And after all of that was done, is that when you started taking these pictures that are shown in exhibit number 117? Right. Okay. So the picture's in, but after every time you cleaned the knife, right? With your chem wipe between those? I'm not sure if we're, could you rephrase your question? This poster is, I'm not sure how that is related to the test cutting. Well, didn't the poster, doesn't it photograph some of what you found? Yes, on the test cuts, right? On this left side? Right, okay. And after you had done your test, your miscellaneous test cuts, and you never did a full T-cut for a test, did you? I did a pretty long one, but not as big as on the evidence screen. And in all of your tests, you found, more or less, consistent rubber particle compared to what you found on the knife? Yes, sir, I did. But in all of your tests, you found more fiberglass rods than what you found on number four? Yes, I did. So in that sense, your testing was inconsistent with what you found on exhibit number four, wasn't it? Well, with the note that after the test was done, I went immediately to the microscope to remove this material. I don't know that if number four bread knife cut the screen, I don't know where it went prior to being placed in the butcher block. In the activity of putting it in the butcher block, you can lose some material. But, of course, you can also lose some of the rubber dust material, too. Sure. So but the two tests, the rubber dust is similar from the test to the knife, but the fiberglass rods are dissimilar from the test to the knife? Only in the number found. Well, since you found one on the knife and you found one intact rod, right. So in that sense, the testing was inconsistent with what you found on the knife. Not necessarily, no. But someone could certainly interpret it that way, couldn't they? Well, you can't expect to do a test and have exactly the same amount of debris wind up at the examining table. So in a control laboratory situation, you are doing the test, you take the knife straight to the microscope. So the point of that is, we ought to be very dadgum careful what conclusions we draw from these tests, shouldn't we? The conclusion that could be drawn from the test is that the similar debris is created when you cut the screen. And you could also draw the conclusion from the test that what you found on the screen was inconsistent with your testing. No, you could never draw that conclusion. No, it's not inconsistent. It is very consistent. But there are a lot more fiberglass rods on one than the other. Three or four more, it's not a lot more. When you did this testing, what did you have on your hands? Anything? Nothing. Okay. Did you look at your hands and see if you had gotten anything on your hands? Any fiberglass particles or any dust particles on your hands? Well, as you are looking under the stereo microscope, The fingers are in the visual field. Gosh, it would seem to me like you wouldn't be able to focus your fingers compared to those things. Wouldn't your fingers be out of focus? Well, if you are looking at something that minute and you get your fingers under there, wouldn't your finger be out of focus? No. Okay. So did you look at your fingertips to see if you had any fiberglass particles on those? Not specifically, no. Okay, so you might have had fiberglass on there, maybe not. Maybe so. Let's just go back to the shirt, just very briefly. And your testimony was that either a left-handed person could have lifted that up and stabbed right-handed, right? Similar to what I am doing? Yes, sir. Or a right-handed or someone could have done it, pulled it up with their right hand and stabbed through. Yes, sir. Okay. Now, Mr. Lynch, in each of these circumstances, I put my thumb or my fingers, as the case may be, on the back of my shirt, didn't I? Right. Now, if my hands were bloody, you would expect there to be blood back there, wouldn't you? Right. A smudge. Okay. And on this shirt, there isn't a fingerprint smudge, is there? Yeah, there is. Where? Let's see it. It's right here by this circle labeled L10. Right on top? That would be consistent with a bloody finger. You aren't testifying that that is a fingerprint, are you? No, I'm not. Farther back here, there aren't any. Down that low, there aren't any. No. Beyond the seam, and that is the seam, is it not, of the shirt itself? Not on the cut part, but the seam of the shirt itself. Can you see where that is? Finish your question and let me think about it. Well, do you see where the seam of the shirt is? Yes, I do. Okay. The little smudge that you just pointed to was on the front of that seam, isn't it? It's just in front of the seam. Okay. So behind the seam on the back of it, you are now assuming how this shirt is on someone, but behind the seam on the back of the shoulder there aren't any fingerprints, are there? No, but there are several in front of the seam. Of course, somebody has got to get both sides, don't they? I mean, somehow or another, they have got to get to the back of that seam, don't they? Or can you say? You mean with their hand? Yes. Not necessarily. You don't think that blood would run through this shirt onto something else? I think that blood would drip from that shirt, okay, and drip through on other objects. When it was initially held up, I imagine it was probably dripping into the sack, and then it was just dropped into the sack. And as it, just one more thing. There is no way to run a test like we ran the DNA test on your hair observation. There is no way to run any kind of testing on either the rod or this dust to verify. There is a way. I was, however, unsuccessful in getting this stuff removed. Let me clarify. In this case, with these particles, there is no way to verify those observations that you made. Well, another microscopist could look at it and verify that. Yeah, that is a glass rod. Well, but another hair sample person could have looked at that hair forever and sure, and would have come to the same conclusions that you came to. Right. What I am talking about is a way to scientifically verify, like we did on the hair, your observations. And there is no way. Am I understanding that right? Well, based on the minuteness of these particles, well, you can make certain judgments about it just from a microscopic view, but that wasn't the question. I don't mean to get, I know that you have talked about your observations, and I'm not quarreling with you about that. What I'm talking about now is, after you have made your observations, whether it be about hair or about these, I'm talking about taking it to that next step. To take it into a lab and running a DNA for fiberglass or whatever it might be called. The next possible step was not accomplished. And it was impossible to accomplish, I guess. By me, it was. That is because those particles were so minute that there was not even enough suitable for testing. That's right, not suitable for additional testing. All right. Mr. Mosty then says, I'll pass the witness. And the court asks, Mr. Davis. And Mr. Greg Davis says, yes, sir. And Mr. Davis of the prosecution begins his redirect examination. Mr. Lynch, just a few questions here. Let's talk about the rubber dust material. Before you saw this material on the blade of the number 4 knife that came out of the butcher block, sir, had you ever, in all of your experience, ever seen this type of rubber dust material before? Not specifically that type of material with that density of pigmentation particles. I don't recall it. Okay. You said it was synthetic. Is that right? Yes, sir. How about the polymer that you found on the screen? Synthetic? Yes, sir. You indicated using some sort of polarized light that you were able to exclude certain types of polymers. Is that right? Yes, sir. What all were you able to exclude? Nylons, acrylics, polyesters, and rayons. Okay. The pigment that you found in the rubber dust material, was it consistent with the color of the screen? It would be consistent with that color. You have to keep in mind, though, that these are thin sections of material and color. The thinner the section, the so-called color that you observe would be different. All right. Let's talk for a moment about fiberglass. Mr. Mosty asked you about other sources of fiberglass. Did you look through that house to determine if there were other possible items inside the house that might be sources of the fiberglass? Yes, sir. Okay. What all did you look at? In the house? Yes, sir. In the house. I just looked through the house, and the only fiberglass I found was some burned fiberglass material in the upstairs fireplace. That was a different type of fiberglass. It was more consistent with insulation origins. He had mentioned insulation. Is that a different type of fiberglass that you saw there on that knife blade? Yes, sir. All right. Other possible types? Did you consider other possible types? Tape? Other things also? Yes, sir. Did you look at those? Did you compare them against the fiberglass that you found on the knife blade? Yes, I did. What was the result? Were they consistent or inconsistent with what you found on the knife blade? The combination of rubber and the glass, I didn't find that combination together in another fiberglass source. The fiberglass fiber alone, there was maybe one other source that had the same diameter and appearance type rod. All right, but if, as I understand, it was not in combination with this rubbery, dusty material, is that correct? No, it was a very different type of material. Mr. Mosty asked you about computer boards. Have you had an opportunity to look at computer boards and determine if they are made of fiberglass or not? Yes, I have. Have you looked at the fiberglass that makes up a computer board and compared it to what you found on the number 4 knife blade? Yes, I have. When you look at a computer board, do you see the same type of rubber dust material connected with that computer board that you found connected with the fiberglass on the knife blade of number 4? In the one that I looked at, it was different. The computer boards are not made of rubber. All right, so the answer is no. It was not there. That's right. Let me ask you about one other source of fiberglass, fingerprint brushes. Are they also made of fiberglass? Yes, they are. Some of the most common fingerprint brushes used by the police are made of fiberglass. Okay. Over this past weekend, did you meet with Officer Charles Hamilton of the Rowlett Police Department? No, sir. Okay. Did you obtain a fingerprint brush from Rowlett? Officer Hamilton left his fingerprint brush at my laboratory over Saturday. All right. Did you compare the fiberglass that made up his fingerprint brush with the fiberglass that you found on the knife blade and the screen also? Yes, I did. All right. What were your findings when you looked at his fingerprint brush and fiberglass that made it up? The fiberglass rods that make up these fingerprint brushes are almost twice as thick as the fiberglass in the screen, so they are very, very different. The fingerprint brush rods are much larger. And let me ask you, when you looked at the butcher block and the 8 knives were still in the block, correct? Right. When you looked at it, did you ever find any black fingerprint powder inside the butcher block? Not inside. The only fingerprint powder I observed was on the knives on either side of the open slot. None of the other knives had been printed. Okay. The number four knife that you tested, where you found the fiberglass and the rubbery material, was there any fingerprint powder on that knife? No, sir. Let's talk about fiberglass on the other knives inside the butcher block. Besides number four, the knife where you found the fiberglass and the rubber material, did you look at the other seven knives to determine whether or not you could find any fiberglass or rubbery material on them? Yes, I did. Okay. What was the result? Didn't find any fiberglass on any of the other knives in the block. Okay. So the only knife in the butcher block where you did find this fiberglass was on number four. Is that right? That's right. That is the same knife that has the black rubbery material on it also? That's right. Do you have an opinion whether or not the dusty rubbery material and the fiberglass that you found on number four were deposited at the same time or not? With regards to the intact rod, they may or may not have been in the same substance. However, the glass debris that is smaller than the rod that was had mixed with the rubbery material, they were at one time together. That would be my opinion. Okay, so the black rubbery material and the glass fragments that were in the material in there at the same time, right? Right. And when you did the test cutting on the screen, you looked at the material. Did you find on your test knife the rubbery material and the glass fibers again wed together? And not the fibers, but the debris that doesn't have shape, but it's glass and smaller than the rod. Yes. Okay. So the rubbery material and let's say the flakes, if you will, were they together on your test knife? Yes, sir. Okay. Mr. Lynch, you were indicating to Mr. Mosty a range that you could show the jurors, just an approximate range where you found the fiberglass rod and the black rubbery material. Can you indicate for the jury the range where you found those two items on the knife blade? Yes, sir. Okay. It would be approximately an inch in from the tip and maybe in the broad area of an additional 5 or 6 inches, maybe this far, but none was collected from the area right up close to the handle. So broadly speaking, it would be in this area here. Okay. With regard to the pattern that you saw there on the carpet where you laid number States Exhibit 67, the knife, do you recall that? Yes, sir. Again, sir, did you find anything inside that house that would fit in this pattern like States Exhibit 67? No, I didn't. Mr. Mosty asked you about the possibility of this knife, actually, number 67, having blood on it being laid on this carpet and then pulling up a possibility of carpet fibers being left on the knife blade. Do you recall that? Right. I believe that you testified it would be possible for carpet fibers to actually remain on the blade once it's lifted, right? They may or may not transfer. Okay, possible that you could leave 67 down here with blood on it, leave this pattern, and not have any carpet fibers transfer off to the blade. Is that also possible? That is possible. Let me give you a different scenario, Mr. Lynch. Assume that 67, States Exhibit 67, was laid on this carpet, sir. That blood transferred from this knife to this carpet to produce this stain. That carpet fibers were left on the blade, okay? Then assume that the knife blade came in contact with something else. For instance, a t-shirt. Would it be possible in that contact for those carpet fibers to be transferred from that knife blade, States Exhibit 67, to the other material so that when you see it in your lab, you don't see carpet fibers? Yes, sir. For instance, if it was used to attack another person after it was laid on the carpet? Yes, sir. Or it was used to produce defects in a t-shirt? Yes, sir. And by the way, Did you examine State's Exhibit Number 25, the defendant's t-shirt, for evidence of carpet fibers, Mr. Lynch? Yes, sir, I did. What was the result of that? There were three carpet fibers that were microscopically the same as the carpeting in the family room of the crime scene. Okay, carpet fibers consistent with this carpet found on the defendant's t-shirt. Is that right? Yes, sir. Well, how about the boy that was actually laying on the carpet, Damon Routier? Did you look at his t-shirt for evidence of carpet fibers? Yes, sir, I did. Did you find any? I found two. Two. Now, this is the boy that is laying down, right? That's right. So for him, he is laying on the carpet. You found two carpet fibers. For the defendant in her t-shirt, you found three. Is that right? That's right. Those defects that Mr. Mosty was showing you up there around the right shoulder area, Mr. Lynch? Yes, sir. The defects that are shown in the photograph that we looked at earlier today. Mr. Lynch, do you have an opinion whether or not it's more consistent for these defects to have been self-inflicted rather than having an intruder come up and produce these types of defects? Mr. Mosty then speaks up and says, I'm going to object to that. That is not within the purview of an expert witness under the Daubert Supreme Court case, because it is not in any manner independently verifiable, and for the other reasons set out in Daubert as adopted by the Texas courts. The court says, thank you, overruled, I'll let him testify if he knows. And Mr. Greg Davis then continues, do you have an opinion? It would be my opinion that they were self-inflicted. Why is that? Well, doing testing with the t-shirt and with the knife to cause those defects at that depth of penetration, you need to have tension on the shirt, and it needs to be a short, measured jab. If you go at the material slowly, contact the material, and continue to push, when the blade does eventually go through, you get a large tear, much larger than what you have there. Those are more consistent with pokes through an extended t-shirt. And in 16 years, I have not seen a killer perform in that fashion. Well, in your 16 years, have you ever seen an intruder enter a house, get a knife from the victim's kitchen, go back out of the house, use the knife that was obtained from the victim's house, cut a screen, and then re-enter a house? No. Mr. John Hagler of the defense team says, Your Honor, that is irrelevant under 401 as far as what he has seen in his past experience. And the court says, overruled. Mr. Greg Davis says, well, your answer was no. Mr. Mosty asked you about what you might expect to see as far as blood. Do you recall that with an intruder? Yes, sir. All right. I want you to assume for me that an intruder comes into a home. That intruder stabs a child four times in the back, those wounds being anywhere from 2 to 4.5 inches deep. Mr. Mosty then says, may we approach the bench? The court says, well, yes, you may. What do we need to talk about? And at this point, a discussion is held. It is off the record, so it is not within the trial transcripts. And then the proceedings were resumed as follows. The court says, you can have a continuing objection. We need to have a record on this outside of the presence of the jury, please. How long will it take? Mr. Mulder of the defense says, about 2 minutes. The court says, well, will the jury step into the jury room briefly, please? So the jury gets up, they're excused from the courtroom, and then proceedings are now being held in the presence of the defendant with his attorney, but outside the presence of the jury. And here's what happens. The court said, let the record reflect that these proceedings are being held outside the presence of the jury and all parties at trial are present. Gentlemen, let's keep our questions right on point. This is not discovery. Let's go on. Mr. Mosty, again, the defense team, says, well, I think the question is, what is Mr. Davis going to ask? The court says, all right, well, Mr. Davis, ask those questions. And then Mr. Davis turns to Mr. Lynch and says, Mr. Lynch, Mr. Mosty had asked you whether it's possible for an intruder to, I believe, stab two children, attack an adult, and flee a scene and not have much blood on him. Do you recall that? Yes, sir. My question to you would be, I want you to assume that an intruder comes into the house, that he stabs two children, one child is stabbed four times, the other child is stabbed two times, that he inflicts 3 wounds to an adult, gets into a struggle with that adult, flees the scene, drops the knife. Is it also possible, under that set of facts, for the intruder to have a considerable amount of blood on him also? He could have, okay. It could go from minimal on the hands to some on the front of the shirt and hands, but I would expect some on the hands, okay. The court then says, that is the question? Mr. Davis says, yes, sir, that is the question I intend to ask. The court then says, any objection? Mr. Mosty says, no, sir. And the court says, all right, if the jury is ready, bring the jury back in, please. So the jury is now brought back into the courtroom, and the proceedings are resumed on the record in open court. And the court then says, let the record reflect that all parties at trial are present and the jury is seated. Mr. Davis, and then Mr. Greg Davis continues his questioning. Thank you, sir. Mr. Lynch, again, let me ask you to assume that an intruder comes into a house and he stabs one child 4 times. He stabs another child 2. He then inflicts 3 wounds to an adult, that he gets into a struggle with that adult while holding a bloody knife. Then he runs through the house, holding a bloody knife, throws that bloody knife down on the floor before fleeing through the garage and the window. Under that scenario, do you also believe that it would be possible for that intruder to have blood on him at the time that he leaves that utility room or flees into that garage? It could be possible, yes. Now, do you recall being asked by Mr. Mosty if all crime scenes are different? Yes, sir. Okay. Sir, in your 16 years, how many crime scenes have you seen where adult survived a child who died there at the scene? At the Institute, we received an average of 600 victims of homicide a year. And I have never been made aware of an instance where the children are killed and the adult survives or has minimal injuries. All right. Mr. Greg Davis then says, I'll pass the witness. The court says, anything, Mr. Mosty? And the defense, Mr. Mosty, says, yes, sir. And the court says, all right, and the recross begins. Mr. Lynch, are you familiar with centimeters? Yes, sir. Would you point out or tell the jury, if I have between my thumbs there 3, is that 3 or 4 centimeters? I can't see. You are thinking about millimeters. All right, millimeters. That is how little I know about it. Have I got about 3 millimeters in between there? That is about right, okay. And do you know whether or not that 3 millimeters is the distance between Darlie Routier being alive or dead? No, I don't know that. You don't know, for instance, how close that slash wound came to cutting her carotid artery open, do you? Well, I am aware that a probing injury went near the carotid sheath. Well, it was within 3 centimeters, 3 millimeters. Then that is within 3 millimeters of being fatal. Isn't it? If it's within 3 millimeters of the artery itself. 2 to 3, I think. Mr. Greg Davis says, Your Honor, I'm sorry. If we're going to get into medical areas with this witness, I would ask for a hearing. I don't believe this witness is qualified to answer medical questions. Mr. Mosty then says, He is the one who testified. The court says, Just a minute, please. Do you know the answer? If you know from your own knowledge, I'll let you answer it. If you don't know, please say so. And then the witness, Mr. Lynch, says, I have done neck dissections on deceased persons, but never living, so I can't answer that. The court then says, next question. Mr. Mosty continues, So, when you say you have never seen a mother survive, you don't know whether or not 3 millimeters in this case would have made any difference in those statistics, do you? No, I don't know. You don't know that had that cut been 3 millimeters deeper, then Darlie Routier would have been the same statistic as what you have seen. That is, dead. That would be a very different type of fatal neck injury than I have ever seen before. I'm just asking you, within 3 millimeters? Well, a straight jab back does not involve the strap muscle. It is very different than any other kind of neck injury I have been aware of. That is not my question, Mr. Lynch. What is the question? Well, I think we all hear it. We have got that. Now, you talked about the fiberglass on the brush. How thick did you tell me that diameter was on Mr. Hamilton's fiberglass dusting rod? It is at least 25% thicker than the fiberglass rods that make up the screen. All right, fiberglass rods that make up the screen were 10 microns diameter? Yes, sir. Okay, so 25% more makes this 12.5 microns? Yes, sir. All right. Now, you told me that a 400% difference in the number of fiberglass particles on this photograph was not significant, didn't you? I don't recall 400% coming out of my mouth today. Well, you said four times. There were three or four times the number of glass particles on your experiments. Right. That is three or 400% more? Yes, sir. You didn't find that significant? No, I didn't. Okay, so instead of about 10 microns, these fiberglass particles in the fingerprint brush are about 12 and a half, say 25% more. They're probably a little larger than that. I didn't put them on, well, those were your words, weren't they? 25%? I said about 25% more, and before that, I said they are almost twice as thick. I didn't do the exact measurement. Well, see, you have bounced around a little bit, haven't you? The rods that make up the fingerprint brush are much bigger than the rods that make up the screen, okay? And you told us 25% bigger just a minute ago. To be conservative, okay? Thank you. Now, the rods in the screen vary in size, too, don't they? Yes, they do. Did you say you had looked at one computer board? Just one? Yes, sir. Just one? Yes, sir. How big was it? It was a small board. Measurement by inches, maybe? Maybe 6 by 8? 6 by 8? Okay. Now, you said that you tested the other knives in the block, and you made the statement that you did not find fiberglass on the other knives in the block? Yes, sir. Did you find the rubber dust particles? No, sir. You talked about the carpet fiber and whether or not that carpet fiber might still be on the knife? Right. Do you remember that? Yes, sir. Somehow or another, that cat hair or dog hair, whichever it was, survived and stayed on that knife, didn't it? The bloody knife? Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it did. Now, all this stuff about could have been self-inflicted, is that how you said that? Yes, sir. These cut holes? Yes, sir. Could have been self-inflicted? Right. And it's also possible that they might not have been, isn't it? Well, mechanically, I don't know how it would happen from another. The point of that is that there is no way, there is no test for that, is there? We can't run DNA on your opinion on that, can we? Well, the test would have to be someone put on the shirt and then have an attacker grab it and lift it up and do the punctures. Of course. Now, you don't know where that shirt was, how it was, or anything else on the body when all this happened, do you? I think it was worn right side out, okay? Other than that, you don't know. No, sir. The point is that there is no way to scientifically validate or invalidate the opinion you just expressed, is there? Well, you do the test. But you would have to assume a whole lot of variables, wouldn't you? You would have to assume some, yeah. Now, you said that perhaps an intruder might flee with blood on their hands, right? That would be consistent with finding some blood, for instance, on a doorknob or an exit door, right? It might or might not leave. It would depend on which hand it was on. Sure. All right. You saw blood on an exit door, didn't you? On a handle, on the utility room door, on the facing area. Yes, sir. Now, did you ever see this maroon pillow? Yes, I did. Did you take that? No, I didn't. Who collected that? That was collected by the Rowlett Police Department. And it had blood. This maroon pillow had blood on both sides of it, didn't it? Right. But did you collect any of that blood? Did I actually remove it from the pillow? Yes. No, sir. Did Catherine do that? Catherine did some, yes. Remove that from the maroon pillow? Right. Did you do any testing on it to determine whose blood was on one side of the pillow and whose blood was on the other side of the pillow? I didn't, no. Where was it done? Was it done? I think some of it was done down at our laboratory and some of it was done at Jean's Green. Are you aware of the results of that? Yes, sir. You know that on that maroon pillow, on one side is the blood of Darlie Routier, and on the other side is the blood of Damon Routier? Yes, sir. You know that? Right. Okay. Mr. Mosty says, that's all I have. Mr. Greg Davis says, no further questions. The court says, you may step down. Thank you for coming. Now, this witness will be excused, subject to recall and to return to Dallas. Is that clear to both sides? Mr. Greg Davis says, yes, sir. The court says, all right. Thank you for coming. And then at this point, the court then asks, who is your next witness? And Mr. Greg Davis says, Judith Floyd. And this is where we are going to end on this and then pick up in the next episode with the testimony of Judith Floyd. All right. So what did we learn or pick up in this last and final episode of Charles Lynch testifying? Well, we hear information about the screen and what was found on one of the knives in the knife block. It was something similar to the screen itself, but was measured in microns. In fact, it was 10 microns in diameter. Now, I had absolutely no idea what to compare that to, so I researched it, and it turns out that a red blood cell is equivalent to 10 microns in diameter. So that at least gives you some kind of perspective. We then learn that Lynch had received the vacuum to, you know, test it for blood and to do the wheels and so forth. And when he received it, there was a paper sack on the handle, but there was nothing covering the bottom. So there was nothing covering the wheels, or he didn't mention the outside, but I'm assuming the outside of it wasn't even covered as well. They did test the wheels of the vacuum, which tested positive for blood, but Lynch hadn't even seen this picture, this evidence photo, where it appeared as though the vacuum had been rolled through blood on the kitchen floor. So I thought that was really interesting that he had never even seen this photo. And yeah, I guess he would think that, hey, this vacuum should have been protected all around. We also learn a whole lot about what screens are made of and different kinds of polymers. Now, I think that what the defense is trying to do is to point out that the items that Lynch saw on the knife could have been made from a wide variety of things, not just a screen. We find out that on the knives that were tested, there were still traces of cellulose, which hadn't come off the knife, even if it had been put in the dishwasher. Now, this is stuff, as I'm sure you guessed from the testimony, that would come from cutting vegetables. It's not easily washed off. And this was brought up because when Lynch was doing the testing on the knife, he did say that he used a chem wipe to wash off this residue on the knife before he performed his second test cut. But the doubt was still there that some of this residue could have been left on the knife even after he had cleaned it. When doing his test experiments, he first went, did the cut, examined the number of fiberglass rods on the knife that he just made this cut with, made his notes, cleaned the knife, went back, did another test cut, and performed the same test. So wiped it, you know, did the test, wiped it over and over again. Now, each time there were significantly more of these fiberglass rods than what was originally found on the actual knife from the knife block. You know, I personally, you have to forgive me here because I'm sitting here thinking if you're going to perform a test, you would think that you would perform the test exactly the same way as it occurred at the scene, right? So instead of just cutting, looking at the knife under this microscope and saying, oh, there's so many rods, I don't understand why he didn't make the cut, put the knife in the knife block, pull it out, and then test it. Because that would make the most logical sense to me to get a better test. But that's just me. I'm not an expert. I just thought that that was kind of common sense. During redirect, the question comes up that the fiberglass that was found on the knife may have gotten there by the person doing the fingerprint dusting. Now, Lynch said that he didn't find any black fingerprint powder on the inside of the butcher block, just on the outside and on either side of the open slot. Now, here's the thing, though. First off, he's being asked about fingerprint powder, not about what would have been on the fingerprint brush itself at the time that the brush is going over this knife block. Plus, if there's an open slot, there has got to be some kind of powder that would get inside this open slot. Fingerprint powder, at least from what I've learned, is, and here we go with the microns again, 1 to 10 microns per particle. Now, we already know that 10 microns in diameter is similar to a red blood cell, but to put it in a more common perspective, it actually has the consistency of talcum powder. So if you were to dust over an open slot on a knife block with talcum powder, do you think that some of that powder would get inside of it? I do. I didn't get this. So as they're going on, and you might have wondered what this objection was by the defense when he started quoting a case in the Supreme Court. Now, here, what they're doing is they're talking about cuts or tears on Darlie's t-shirt. And they're trying to figure out if she caused them herself or if someone else did. And Mr. Mosty objected to this, arguing that Mr. Lynch's opinion on how the shirt got damaged doesn't meet strict scientific standards set by the Supreme Court decision, also known as the Daubert standard. Now, what this standard means is that it ensures that any expert testimony in court should be based on scientifically verifiable methods. His objection was that Lynch's views were not based on a method that you could test or verify independently, which is required for the evidence to be reliable and acceptable in court. The judge overruled his objection. And then we again hear about the Rule 401 objection. We've heard about this before in previous testimony. Rule 401 in court, it deals with whether evidence is relevant to the case. So in order for evidence to be considered relevant, it must help prove or disprove something important about the case. It should make a fact more likely to be true or not. Now, in this specific situation, in this testimony, Mr. Mosty raised an objection about Lynch's testimony regarding his past experiences with intruders. And the objection was that whether Lynch has or hasn't seen similar cases in his 16 years is not directly helpful in proving any key facts in the current case. And essentially, the argument is that Lynch's personal experience with what intruders typically do or don't do does not necessarily prove or disprove anything about what happened in this situation. So, under Rule 401, this testimony is considered irrelevant because it doesn't directly affect the facts that need to be resolved. This, too, was overruled by the judge. And lastly, they started kind of talking about the Darlie's injuries, and especially the one to her neck. And when Mr. Mosty asked Lynch if he knew that Darlie's wound was within 3 millimeters of her carotid artery, he said he did not know. And this is important because as he's talking about all of this, hey, all these years of my experience and so forth and so on, you know, he's never seen a mother, for example, survive her children, but yet he had no idea that, you know, Darlie was within 3 millimeters of also losing her life. And just for the record, 3 millimeters is about 2 pennies stacked together. So that also kind of helps put it into perspective. So anyway, that's all we have for this particular episode. And again, like I said, we're going to continue in the next episode, which is actually going to be fairly short. And it's the testimony of Judith Floyd. She actually testifies twice, but there is somebody in between her testimonies. So her first testimony will be next, will be very short, and then we'll move on with the rest of the testimony. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate all of you. Please give this a thumbs up. If you're on YouTube, like, subscribe. I would so much appreciate it. It helps this channel so, 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 so much. Thank you, and we will talk very, very soon.